Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Mully and Hall. Up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
Bears, 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 Bears. Football, football, football.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Clinton Dix in town, and he's meeting with the Bears today.
This is the second wave of free agency. In this stage of this process, you don't just give away the money.
That's it. There's the answer.
You have to come in. Yep. You have to have a feel. Maybe he's interviewing them as well, but the bigger aspect is they want to get to know the guy as well as Eddie Jackson knows him. Maybe they're selling him on the idea of coming into a defense which is ready-made.
I'll be very curious to see if they give him a contract offer before he leaves, because you're right. This is not the first wave of free agency. This is not whatever it costs we're going to get them. This is, listen, the music is playing and the chairs are being filled up pretty quickly. Hey, you want to come here? This would be a good option for you. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we'll give you.
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Happy Thursday. Not so happy for you. You seem a little bit down in the dumps.
I'm a little bummed. Now the reports are that Dane Dunning, the White Sox minor leaguer, is meeting with Dr. James Andrews on Monday in Florida. Dr. James Andrews, of course, well-known surgically repairing shoulders. Tommy John man.
Well, I'm sorry that put you in a bad mood.
It took me to follow
you. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
And
I hate
Craig
for you to
Kimbrell?
Dwell on the White Sox.
No Craig Kimbrell? Well, is that good news?
No, that's not good news.
So we're having baseball anxiety.
Mully and Hall.
Mully and Haha.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We could do that for a day if they sign him.
You know what? Here's the problem with doing that for a day. That's how nicknames get started.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Okay.
You don't want that to turn into your radio.
No.
It's Mully and Haw.
Yeah.
You don't want that to happen. So just back off.
Okay.
Trust me, I'll back off
that one.
Yeah, that was funny, but not for a day.
No. We do have some baseball anxiety, though, to address.
Oh, mother of God.
Yeah. Thank you, Akeem.
Yeah, Akeem.
Nice to hear from you. Thanks for calling on time.
Oh, boy.
Oh, check me out, man.
Yeah.
I know that it's a recording because it's 7:05.
Oh, boy. Let's talk baseball. The White Sox, as you heard there in the open, Dane Dunning, who, of course, is, dare we say, the third man in the Adam Eaton deal. Is that fair? I don't know that it's – he was a former first-round draft pick by Washington and a guy that looked like he was making a mockery of the minor leagues and heading to the big league club to join the other players in that trade, Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito. And then lo and behold, last year he started having some issues and they shut him down. And then he comes into camp and he has an issue and they shut him down. And then he starts his throwing program and he has an issue. And now maybe they shut him down for a couple of years because he's meeting with Dr. James Andrews, and he is obviously, as Rick Hahn said yesterday, everything is on the table, and that is just a little bit disappointing, and it's what happens with young pitchers. It's what happens with White Sox prospects. There's
it's unfortunate, but not totally unexpected. You feared the worst, and this could be the worst. Also, yesterday we learned that Eloy Jimenez will be sent down to Charlotte and begin the season at AAA as, again, not a terribly surprising to anybody.
Aloy, Dylan Cease, and Louis Robert were all moved to the minor league.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Minors. Well, they're still.
Go down with the minor league.
They're in the backfield.
Yeah.
That's all.
They don't have to change the locker
not
or anything
the backfield.
Like that.
They're not.
No, they're not in the backfield. They're not playing running back.
Okay.
They didn't sign him to play running back or defensive back. And you can see him tomorrow practice in the backfield when you head out to Arizona for Sox camp.
Yeah.
He hit 154 at spring training. I think probably the Sox as much as they'd like to see him develop and dominate and all these things, probably were a tiny bit relieved that he did not make this more difficult of a decision or more hype surrounding his spring training. Because he hit 154. They can say with a straight face that they're going to send him to AAA to get his timing down, to get into a groove that he clearly has not been in yet during spring training. Yes or no?
Well, I understand what you're saying. I think they had made the decision anyway to send him down.
They made that decision last year.
That's what I'm saying. It is a lot about years of service and all that stuff. Having said that, I think that they also were a little, and we got people mad at us because we talked about the fact that he wasn't hitting at all in spring training. That's a legitimate thing to contemplate when a guy is trying to make a case to make the club. I think you'd rather look like a fool because the guy's playing so well than have him misstep a little bit and justify your decision not to bring him up. That's just my opinion.
Maybe so. I still think there's a facade here. He's still one of your 25 best players. He still should be on the major league roster on opening day. He's still good enough to justify making that decision. We all understand why the Sox won't make that decision. We all can almost respect the idea that this is the baseball reality. This is the problem that everybody needs to address. This is what Colin McHugh from the Houston Astros is railing about on Twitter when he tweeted out, wishing Aloy the best of luck as he goes to AAA to work on .. defense, base running, creating excess value for a $1.5 billion franchise that hasn't made the playoffs in a decade, bunting.
Yeah, I understand the feeling about that sort of thing, and hopefully that will be resolved in their labor dispute. But would you not be foolish if you didn't try to extend the years of service, given the fact that it's perfectly within the rights and other teams have done it? So why would you be the one team that says, you know what, we're putting an end to this nonsense.
At this stage,
we want this guy to get to free agency quicker, when you're just, whatever, 10 days or 2 weeks away.
It'd be professional negligence.
Yes.
You couldn't, where the Sox are in their development, this is not a team that's going to contend this year. And if they do, it'll be the story of the baseball season. So where you are in terms of your rebuild to gain 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it is that you have to just for this season and forfeit an extra year of control, it's nonsense.
This is what Rick Hahn said yesterday after moving Aloy to the backfield. He said, I give him a lot of credit for not only being fully aware of where he's at with his timing being off, but being honest with himself and honest with everyone else about how he felt at the plate. That's only going to improve with repetition. And he said he has zero concerns about his future. We're still extremely bullish on his future. We think he's going to be an impactful White Sox for a long time, and sending him out really doesn't change our long-term view of him.
I believe that. Here's what I ask you about, though.
Yeah.
Chris Bryant was very honest in recalling, his reaction to when he knew that he had a strong spring training.
Yes.
In 2015.
And he had done everything needed to be done.
He did everything. He checked every box. And he still knew that when the inevitable day came and the Sox and the Cubs sent him to Iowa and they'd made that decision in spring training, he was ticked off. And he remembered being ticked off when he finally got the news. I don't know if the reality of knowing no matter how good of a spring training Aloy Jimenez could have had, he was not going to join the Sox on opening day. He knew that he was ticketed for Charlotte. Do you think that in any way affected his approach to spring training, affected his psyche during, the last couple of weeks? Did it have did it contribute at all to his 154 average, which was
a bit
of a surprise?
I think his timing was off. I think he's right. I think he was just not in rhythm for whatever reason. I don't think, I hope not, David, because the idea that he took external problems to the plate and then ran afoul of issue is more disturbing to me. I'm saying I hope not. I hope he just didn't. It wasn't something where it got into his head in any way, because I don't think that's a good sign if that happened.
David, I was thinking the exact same thing. Some unconscious kind of, underlying thing, like, I have no shot at making this team. I already know it's established, and maybe on some level that did affect his performance. I was thinking the exact same
thing. This is a guy who thrives on pressure. He loves the moment. He loves being counted on. Look at last year. He knew all eyes were on him. He performed anyway. When he came to spring training, nothing he could have done would have changed the news that broke yesterday that he's going to minor league camp at opening the season in Charlotte. I do wonder for a guy like that if it affected him in any way.
What do you make of this one? The Hector Gomez tweet.
Can you help me? So Hector Gomez is somebody that was all over. I think he works for a outlet. I don't think it's ESPN Deportes, but he maybe used to work there. He was on Twitter, and he was very active in the Manny Machado information.
Yes. Yeah.
And
wrong.
Sourcing some of that information. He tweets out that
Ed Machado close to the White Sox.
Yeah, Eloy Jimenez would be close to reaching a $100 million 8-year contract extension with the Chicago White Sox, keeping baseball's top prospect under club control through 2026. That is a tweet that came out last night.
Okay.
And got Sox fans and Sox Twitter abuzz a little bit.
I don't understand it. I mean, he's not baseball's top prospect. He's one of baseball's top prospects.
He's a White Sox top prospect.
He is, yeah. But he says keeping baseball's top prospect under club control.
It's inaccurate. Yeah, that's inaccurate. Yeah.
And I don't know how accurate it is that they're going to give him $100 million.
Well, let's look at that, okay?
They have him under contract for 7 more years, right? Whenever he shows up. So that's
what would motivate the player? What would motivate his agents? The agents who, Paul Kinzer, who spoke out last year. Against this idea, the whole service time discussion, obviously an agent's going to do that. But what would motivate the player like that?
It's 2019, and they have him for 7 years once he comes up, right?
What's in it for the player, though, to sign an 8-year contract worth $100 million?
Well, to get $12.5 million a year without having to wait 7 years to get it.
Right.
But I don't know why the team would
give
him this deal without seeing him take one major league at bat, already sending him to minor league camp.
You
would think that if they were going to do this, they'd bring him up on the opening day roster to get some kind of goodwill back.
That's the other side of it. $100 million commitment to somebody who hasn't made his major league debut yet. But, again, if you're the player and you're betting on yourself, $100 million for the next 8 years of Eloy Jimenez could be, he's going to be a guy that breaks the bank, you would think.
Yeah.
At some point, you're going to have to give him a contract extension to keep him off the market.
Okay.
What's that going to be worth?
But look at where his contract is now. I don't know that I understand the upside for the club. Goodwill? Is that the upside? Is it buying out his
bargain, maybe?
Yeah.
If he's a guy that develops into an MVP candidate, you don't have to go to him after year four and say, like the Chris Bryant discussion that we're having with the Cubs, and when do you go to him, and how much will it take to lock him up long term, and the Javi Baez discussion. If you sign him to an 8-year, $100 million contract now.
But can't you wait 2 years and do that and see that he's getting there?
Then maybe it'll cost you more.
It's going to cost you more after 2 years.
All right.
I guess that would be the argument. It's not an argument I would make.
So this is the money that they have left over from the Manny failure is that the idea?
Oh, look what I found on the couch here.
We promised we'd spend this money. Why don't we give it to you?
$100 million.
Incentive laden, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Just double checking. Yeah. I don't know. I was a little confused by that. Someone will explain it to us. Hopefully soon, but we're going to shift gears. We're going to bring in Dan Pompey. We'll talk to our resident football man about what's going on in football. My goodness gracious, who has really risen above the fray with a lot of these moves? I know that there's a lot of teams that will be on national television more, but how will that translate?
Who's won free agency?
Into, yes. Yeah. 312-644-6767. We'll get to your calls in a bit, but we've got Dan Pompey next. It's Mully and Hall on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. And we have a little loop to close here on our baseball conversation, right?
Yeah, well, we were talking about why the report from, the tweet from Hector Gomez, who works for Z101 Digital in the Dominican Republic, talked about the White Sox and Eloy Jimenez talking about an 8-year, $100 million contract extension. And there is some type of precedent for it, but you have to go way back. Evan Longoria, formerly of the Tampa Bay Rays, six games into his major league career in April 2008, signed a six-year, $44 million extension, which was the range of the contract over nine seasons. So $44 million contract in 2008 versus $100 million contract extension in 2019. A little bit of difference, but same idea, because Longoria wasn't the player that he became, but they had a pretty good sense that he was going to be an all-star. Six games into his major league career, they saw the need to invest in him long-term, and it paid off for them. So maybe this report, this idea is rooted in that idea that the White Sox believe it's worth the money.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I hope that Tim Anderson is worth the money. They gave him, they bought out his years, and
well, I think he will be, but last night was not a good night to make that argument.
Yeah, but he's looked pretty good generally speaking in camp, and he played well at the end of last year, and hopefully this is the breakthrough for him. And I love the way he responded to the Manny Machado stuff.
So you're just going to ignore the
I'm ignoring everything else.
Three errors last night.
I'm ignoring that because we've got big news. We've got our man Dan Pompey joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of $7,000 off on Jeeps. Dan, of course, with the Bleacher Report and the Athletic and with the Score. Good morning, Dan. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, fellas. Good to be with you today. Exciting start to free agency, huh?
Oh, my. Exciting. It was just like, I mean, I need a scorecard.
Frantic.
I got to buy a magazine immediately, but I don't think it's all out yet. Who are these teams, and how is all this happening at such breakneck pace? I know it happens every year, but we're seeing major stars moving. It's really pretty incredible.
Yeah, which you usually don't see, at least not to the level that we're seeing it now. It's interesting, too, that we're seeing some players, like the two Steelers guys, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, kind of leverage themselves into this position. So you wonder if this is kind of the start of a trend in the NFL where players are going to become a little bit more empowered, especially the star players. I don't think it's going to work with the rank and file guys, of course, but it seems like the NFL is going more and more towards this kind of haves and have-nots, right, among the players, where the big guns are able to really call their shots and make their own situation whatever they want it to be, and the other guys, you know, we're going to start seeing now that there's going to be a big drop-off in spending, and there's going to be a lot of disappointed free agents and guys who have to sign one-year deals and kind of below-market deals, and they're going to be disappointed, but that's how the process works.
Well, yes and no, Dan. I think that when you look at Antonio Brown and you look at Odell Beckham Jr. and you look at Le'Veon Bell, are we seeing the trend toward those are guys that teams let get away too. I mean, so are we, because in large part because of their character or football character issues, are we seeing talent used to always prevail? Is that changing around the league?
I don't think so. I think, you know, we've always had situations like this. I mean, you know, you go back to Terrell Owens. You go back to, you want to go further back? How about Doug Atkins? You know, a tremendous Hall of Fame player. And he couldn't stay in Cleveland, and he couldn't stay in Chicago, and even though he was a great player. You know, I think this is something that has gone on and on and on in the NFL and continue to go on. I mean, the stakes are higher than ever, obviously, because there's more money involved, and now you've got free agency where you once did not. But I think this is kind of an old story replaying itself.
Well, we want to get your take on who won free agency, but I think there seems to be a general feeling that the Giants lost free agency, that whatever they're doing doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense to everyone. They've lost a pass rusher, a starting safety. They were going to lose the safety anyway. They trade OBJ, and now they're, I guess Sunday, they owe Eli a $5 million roster bonus, which they're going to pay. So, I mean,
that's crazy.
What are they doing?
Yeah, you know, you kind of think they're either on the pot or off the pot, right? What are they? Are they rebuilding or are they trying to win now? And I guess what Gettleman said, their general manager, was that he thinks they can do both. He thinks they can kind of win while they're trying to reload. So we'll see. You know, I didn't think the OBJ thing was as crazy as a lot of people did. I didn't understand the Landon Collins thing. I guess they thought less of him than a lot of other people in the league, especially the Washington Redskins, who paid him a ton of money. But the OBJ thing, you know, I think he was a player that they just found really impossible to manage and insubordinate in some ways, and also a player who wasn't always reliable and didn't always answer the bell, you know, missed a lot of games in his first, was it 5 years. And
but you thought the return would be more, Dan. I'm with you. It didn't shock me that they traded him because, you know, I was told they were going to. But the idea that that's all they got, and then the idea that maybe they're going to use that 17th pick to couple it with their pick to move up to make sure they get Haskins, that even seems crazier to me. Like, really? That's what you did?
Well, I think you have to understand that he's devalued by his personality, right? Or by his, you know, the situations that he's gotten himself in with the Giants. So, you know, it's not like you're trading a guy who is unblemished, who's got, you know, no warts on him. He's got warts. And, you know, I think with OBJ, everyone looks at the potential and the talent, right? And that's understandable. It's easy to forget about the other stuff, though, the actual production and the times when he wasn't productive and the times that he stirred the pot in a bad way. So you've got that. And, you know, I mean, the return wasn't terrible. I mean, they got a first, a third, and
Jabril Peppers.
Yep. A good safety, you know. So, I mean, that's not terrible.
But they also take $21 million in cap hit, right? I mean, they get 15 this year and six next year. That seems like a lot.
That to me, the mistake was the contract, right, more than the trade. You made the commitment to him, and you thought that you were going to be married for eternity, and then you decided to get a divorce a year later. And now you have to pay alimony and give the house up and everything else. So, you know, that was the problem. The problem was the mistake made a year ago.
Dan, the Bears are hosting Ha Ha Clinton Dix today at Hallis Hall. They're evaluating what to do. I think you could make the argument if they end up signing him, and I don't know that they will, don't know that they won't, but if they do, that they may have upgraded that position from Adrian Amos. How much do you think he would cost, and what should the Bears do with that position?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, with the safety position, strong safety position on the Bears, either you want to get another rank-and-file guy, kind of like Amos, at a better price so you could use your money elsewhere, or you want to get an upgrade to the position. And I think Clinton Dix is a potential upgrade at the position. I mean, maybe not a huge upgrade, but I think he's a more talented guy. You know, he's a guy with a strong personality. I think he would probably fit in well in the Bears locker room. I know Nick Saban loved him when he was at Alabama. And he's got more potential than Amos, I think, to do everything at the safety position. You know, he can cover and he can play the back end. He could give Chuck Pagano more versatility, I think, in the coverages that he calls and, you know, enable him to use his safeties in a more versatile way. So, you know, he's a guy with some ball skills, but he's also a guy who, you know, the Packers didn't want anymore. So that tells you a little something, too. But I think he'd be a very good pickup for the Bears if they get him at the right price. He's, you know, you just don't want to go out and have to pay a ton of money for a guy like that after losing Amos. And I don't think they will.
Dan, we're out of time, but just quickly on the way out, who won free agency? Who's the winning team? A lot of people like the Browns, the Raiders, the Jets. Certainly they're going to be better because they were so awful.
Yeah, you know, I think certainly all three of those teams added a lot of talent. I would say, you know, the Browns probably added, I don't know, the Browns or the Jets added the most, I think. But certainly we've seen in the past that the teams that win free agency don't always win the Super Bowl. So it's going to be interesting to see how these players integrate into their new teams, if they are as productive as they were with their previous teams, and if they are returning value on their contracts.
Great stuff, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Appreciate it. That's our guy, Dan Pompey. And Joe, did I read that correctly, that the over-under now for Cleveland is 9.5?
I did see that, yes.
That's crazy. I think I'm going under.
I'm going under.
They just haven't done anything yet, and there's going to be pressure on them. Like
Freddie Kitchens. Going under.
Yes, Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah. Super Bowl odds say they're the fifth best team.
Come on.
Oh, I mean, that's just a reaction to all the money flowing in.
That's because people are betting.
But that is insane. Oh, I'm still betting it. Under 20, 15, I'm still betting it. By the way, the Bears better not lose to the Giants this year.
Wow.
Even if Chase Daniel's out there once again, they better not lose this time around.
The smart teams will resist the temptation to go after the big name, to chase the buzz that comes from signing one of these guys early on, and understand, hey, you know what? We're better off being patient. We're better off shopping for bargains. And from the Bears' perspective, waiting, being patient, it's going to get you a better deal. And that's always good. Either you have a great player at a good contract, or if the player isn't good, you can get out of it with minimal pain.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Mike Florio. He was on yesterday with Dan and Connor. And always good to hear what Mike has to say. And it's fairly logical stuff. I don't think any big surprise there.
Oh, sure. I mean, this free agent period is different from last year's free agent period for the Bears. Last year, you could say they won free agency, or they made themselves a lot better. They were bold. They were aggressive. And they had to be. They were dealing from a position of weakness and somewhat desperation. This year, not so much.
I think last year they had a plan on offense because of the coach they'd hired, and they went out and got pieces that would fit their offense.
It's nice to
have a plan.
Yeah,
and they had a plan, and it worked. And I don't know that any of these teams that we're talking about. I don't know. You know, the Bears went from last to first in their division. Can you say that Oakland's going to do that? Can you say that the Jets are going to do it, or the Cleveland Browns? I guess the Browns didn't.
The
finish
Browns
last,
did not
right?
finish last, but they could be the of those three the most likely division champion. I would have a hard time seeing the Raiders go from worst to first in the AFC West.
Yeah.
And I don't believe the Jets are going to surpass the Patriots.
The Niners? Did they get enough done?
They got Tevin Coleman yesterday. They've had a really active offseason.
Well, and they had a ton of money to spend. They had a massive amount of cap space, but they also...
Ford trade is a good one.
They also have the quarterback coming back, so that could be the biggest influence on their movement from one year to the next, right?
I believe they've had if you want to say the Browns won free agency so far, and I think you can make that argument with that big trade they made for Beckham, and the defensive moves that they made too.
Getting two Giants.
So let's say, exactly.
Vernon Olivier.
The Browns and the 49ers are probably up there as well because of the way they improved. And the fact, as you point out, Jimmy Garoppolo is like getting...
That's it. That's what's...
It's
that's
like the Cubs
difference.
Getting Darvish back.
Yeah. How many quarterbacks they use, Stephen A. Smith? They use like 15 of them, including the punter. But the fact is...
Nick Mullins doesn't do it for you?
Well, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo does it for me. And that's, you know, it's hard to be good when your quarterback goes down. Now, I don't know if you saw the Sun-Times today, but Adam L. Johns checks in with a story. Basically, and I don't know that he wrote this necessarily, but the back page, True North, offseason moves by division rivals show teams are motivated by Mitch. Were these moves made to try to combat Mitch Trubisky?
I mentioned that to you. I think that's quite a leap. I don't believe that the Packers, went out to sign new edge rushers and Adrian Amos because of Mitch Trubisky. I don't think the Vikings re-signed Anthony Barr, and I don't think the Lions went out and got a nickelback and a defensive end, Trey Flowers, because they were fearful that Mitch Trubisky was going to develop at a rate that they couldn't handle. I don't even know if the Bears understand or know how good Mitch Trubisky is going to be yet. So how could the teams in the division respond in a way that makes them seem fearful of his development? Here's the Bears parallel, if you want to draw one. If you're forced to draw one, everyone in the division saw how good the Bears can be and how good a team can be when you have a defense that you trust to the degree that the Bears trust their defense and rely upon their defense. So you go out and you build up your defense in a division where defense matters.
Well, I mean, look, the head coach of two of those three teams is a defensive-minded guy, right? So what are you going to do? How are you going to build your team with what you know best? And Mike Zimmer has got Anthony Barr coming back rather than leaving. Anthony Barr thought better of it when he woke up in the morning and took $500,000 less to stay in Minnesota, where he knew he was going to have a Pro Bowl season, as opposed to try to go and recreate that with the Jets. He knew he fit in to what they were doing, and that's, I don't think he did it because someone's got to stop Mitch and I'll be the guy to do it.
Yeah, I think that gives Mitch a little too much credit for having arrived before he's arrived.
But having said that, this is the year that I've been waiting for with Mitchell Trubisky. This is it. I mean, I'm very excited.
You and everybody else.
And we've talked about this quite a bit, that this is the fifth year of Ryan Pace as general manager. This is the third year of Mitchell Trubisky as quarterback. And this is the second year with the coach / offensive genius at the helm. So you would think that, first of all, the scheme will be better in the second year than it was in the first, that the quarterback, you know, what's the old adage about draft picks? You know by the third year what you have. So you should know exactly what the trajectory of Mitch's career is after this year. You should have an answer to what we're talking about here. And obviously, 5 years into a GM's program, the draft, everything else, you should see the old five-year plan kick into place, right?
Yep, exactly. Well put. Now, and I'll buy this argument more than I would the one that the division rivals are trying to load up so they can stop Mr. Trubisky. I would more likely believe that Ryan Pace's moves in getting Cordarrelle Patterson and even Mike Davis to a lesser degree are designed to get the most out of your quarterback,
sure,
because it's conducive to your offense. It's consistent with your scheme. Cordarrelle Patterson is a guy you can use in three different positions in your offense. You can isolate mismatch opportunities, which Matt Nagy has been known to do. And Mike Davis is probably, in the eyes of the offensive coaches at Hallis Hall, a better fit for this offense, a better fit for the offense that Mitch leads than Jordan Howard. So he's going to get every opportunity now. And you're right, there are no more excuses here. This is the second year in an offense. You're not at 101 anymore, 100-level offensive philosophy. You're at the next level. You're at the next degree. The expectations rise too. So if you have more weapons, more is expected out of you. So now it's time for Mitch to deliver.
And it's not just him, but I agree with you. Obviously, he's the centerpiece of it. But I think that it's going to be a lot of fun to just see what the coaching staff can get done and how they can manipulate things and use it. And I would like to see Mitch kind of, you know, running is a weapon for him, but maybe run less and make big plays more. We want to see more big plays out of this offense.
As he gets older, he's going to have to do that more.
Yeah.
I have been really pleased, I guess, with overall the approach, the free agency that Ryan Pace has taken, because he hasn't overreacted. He hasn't gotten swept away in the whole idea of, okay, you know, Le'Veon Bell is out there, let's get into the bidding. That was maybe more speculation than reality. And he's been pretty strategic here, and he's been he's had to be, because he doesn't have the salary cap flexibility that he had a year ago because of the move that he made to get Khalil Mack. You have more, but you don't have a ton. And so it'll be interesting to see these last couple moves. Who are you going to sign to play safety, and are you going to pursue a kicker? How much money do you have left to do both?
So who's the best quarterback in the NFC North? It remains the same guy it's been, in Aaron Rodgers. How do you feel about Matthew Stafford? Do you put him behind Mitch, ahead of Mitch? Where are you at with?
Depends on the Sunday, doesn't it? He's so streaky that
when he's
hot, he's right behind Rodgers. He's better than Mitch.
Yes, of course.
But there are times when Mitch Trubisky, surrounded by the weapons he has, you know, you would rather have him running a drive. And for the long term. But if you have to win one game, I still think that I'd give the benefit of the doubt to Matthew Stafford.
And have you given up on the pride of Barrington in Minnesota? Do you think that's a failed experiment? I think a lot of people are, you know, giving a thumbs down to that one.
I still think that Kirk Cousins, as disappointing as he was last year,
can be better.
I think he can be better. He's got to be better.
Yeah, he has to be better.
You know, because he can't be worse.
Because he's to whom much is given, much is expected, and he's being paid as a franchise quarterback. Mitch, of course, the lowest paid quarterback in the division. And I don't know what you have with him. I'm not going to sit here and say that Mitch, oh yeah, he's going to be the guy. He's the one that, you know, his legs, his mobility make him a big threat. I would like for the big threat to be his arm and his ability to pick apart a defense and read a defense and not just kind of bail out on some plays. Try not to leave so much on the field, right? You got to get more than 15 points out of a playoff game. And I get it, the kicker missed a field goal, but, you know, feel free if you're going to throw the ball down the field and get a big play, let's see it bust open.
You saw a ton of things being encouraged by from Mitch Trubisky last year. I think what you're saying is what a lot of people have suggested. You would like to see things that aren't necessarily married to the scheme. You would see things that you don't want to attach his success to because
exactly.
they schemed guys open. And this
exactly.
is a product of the system more
you'd
than
like
just a product of
you'd
his
like
ability.
You'd like to see him read the field yeah. and find the open man. And you don't want to see guys kind of waving and he's going in a different direction.
That's what
direction.
You want to see in year yeah. three.
That's it.
The idea that,
that
he is comfortable enough and has command enough of the position where his athletic ability just takes over and he is the guy you thought you were getting when you drafted him second overall.
312-644-6767. Are you satisfied that the quarterback is the reason that teams are rebuilding around the league, around the division? Do you think that people have a fear of Mitch? And would that include Bear fans? 312-644-6767 is the telephone number.
And closer to home, who do you want playing safety for the Bears next year? Clinton Dix or Eric Berry?
It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 in the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.